the return of our tech team here to help us keep up with the technology in our lives. It's that time of year again when the tech publications start buzzing about the release of a new iPhone. Apple has scheduled a big event for September 12th, and the speculation is rampant. Will the iPhone even have a home button? Will it use facial recognition technology? Will it cost $1,200? There are other big tech stories as well, of course. Consumers and business analysts alike are paying close attention to Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods. As prices drop, we wonder what it means for our retail system. And e-readers seem to be losing their luster in today's market. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, our tech team returns to talk about all the latest technology news, including the end of Amazon's one-click patent, and of course, to answer your questions. Main calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Are you eagerly awaiting the release of the new iPhone? Have you shopped at Whole Foods since Amazon lowered its prices? Has your kid come home with a new tablet or laptop from school? Well, today our tech team returns to talk about the world of technology and to answer your questions about your personal technology. Joining me in the studio, Janet McKenney. She's Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology. And Andrew Rosenstein is the owner of TechPort. As always, we want to hear from you. What are your tech questions? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back, you all. It feels like it's been a while.
Yes, yeah, it has.
So supposedly on September 12th, Apple's going to make a big announcement. Andrew, what do we know about it? Is it really the iPhone 8? And what do we know versus what's being speculated?
Well, we know that there are probably going to be updates to the 7, meaning a 7S. That's probably less expensive than the full iPhone 8, which price points estimated are $900 to $1,000. So, which is probably a larger price to incorporate the fact that Samsung's advanced phones have similar price points, and Apple's just trying to be in the same running as those price points. Also, remember, keeping in mind that the rumors might have a redesigned faceplate, meaning the home button may be going away and traded off for possibly facial recognition.
Yeah, I read that.
Or yes.
And so you would log in by holding the phone up to your face.
Right, which isn't always that practical because it's much easier, I find, to reach for your phone and it. But I think that fingerprint sensing may encompass more of the screen than just the home button. So meaning there are two ways it could go. Facial recognition, which is possible, but also more likely is that fingerprint sensing will be active throughout the whole display. So there isn't necessarily so touch anywhere and the phone unlocks.
Okay, so you've talked about the new iPhone. What's so special about the Samsung, Janet, that iPhone's trying to keep up with it, match it?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I know a lot of people that have their Samsungs, but they had the ones that blew up. So a lot of people that I know that had Samsungs didn't, you know, move to any new one yet. I see a lot of people just waiting to see what everything looks like before making a final decision. I know I have to make a decision. I have an iPhone 6, and so instead of getting a 7, I was waiting for the 8. So now with the price point and what the 8's going to be about, I'll have to make a decision which phone to upgrade to.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people making this kind of decision as the prices rise, right, Jared?
Yeah, we are. And a lot like Janet, I mean, my plan is probably to get the 8. I had a 4, skipped the 5, went to the 6, skipped the 7, get the 8. Don't have
but
to
you
adopt
went from
everything.
$500 to $600
no,
to...
But
no,
but see, the thing is you don't, because everything is geared now towards, you know, the phone companies. I remember when I got my 6, I went in and the old school phone plan was if you paid them their $500 or $600 up front, you didn't get locked into a plan. And when I tried to do that with the 6, I was told essentially, well, right before the 6 came out, AT&T basically gave a bunch of I almost got a free discount. They lowered my bill $30. And then I was told, well, if you can buy the phone and pay cash, but we don't do contracts anymore, but we're going to up your bill, you're going to lose that discount. So basically they pigeonholed me, and and that's how they do it now, into they don't want you to buy the phone. So most people aren't shelling out $1,000 for this new phone. Most people are going to pay $35 a month on their bill for the next umpteen years. So in reality, the phone that has a retail price of, say, $1,000 is a round number, you're probably actually going to end up spending $1,200 or $1,300 on it because they're going to break it up. Because we're the Netflix Society. Hey, do you want to buy Microsoft Office for $250? No. Do you want to pay $7.99 a month in perpetuity? And that's how we all kind of look at things now. And so that is a big way they help ease that price point. But also in the long run, honestly, you're probably going to pay more if you break it up in your bill.
Isn't it really almost as though we're leasing phones now? Because we're not going to really ever pay off that $1,000 if we're paying $30 a month.
Well, you will. I mean, at $30 a month, you're at $360. 3 years later, you're at your $1,000. Yeah. And they do usually around 3 year plans. I think I technically own my 6 now, but you will in the long run, like anything, when you quote unquote finance it, there might not be a real finance charge in there, but you're going to pay more than if you have straight paid for it retail. And most of us are going to do it with a smile on our face because they just took the pain and broke it up so you don't even realize it's happening.
It'll be interesting to see if that monthly price goes up with the new iPhone, because the whole idea was that when a new one came out for the same subscription price, you were going to have the next biggest and greatest phone. And whether they'll stay true to that with the rise in the costs remains to be seen.
But don't despair if you don't plan on purchasing a new phone, because the new operating system for the phones will be available for iPhone 6 and above.
Funny, my phone just gave me a message about that yesterday.
Yes, and it's I've been testing it this summer. It's pretty amazing. Lots of things have changed. It has an easier to read look, especially for older eyes like mine. But it's going to be incorporating lots of new features like Apple peer-to-peer payment system with Apple Pay, meaning those of you who use something like Venmo to share the bill.
I don't, but Janet's nodding.
Right. If you're out for Mexican food and 8 people want to split the check, it's a great thing to use. But you can now use Apple Pay. Control Center has been redesigned, so you can get those volume controls easier. And the feature that a lot of people are talking about is do not disturb while driving, meaning your phone, you can set your phone to turn off and it doesn't display calls, it doesn't display any texts or anything like that that could be distracting during driving.
So let me back up a little bit. You're talking about the new operating systems. I know that my phone just gave me a message. There's an ongoing debate in my family about when one ought to upgrade to a new operating system. What is the answer, Andrew? My children say the second that you can, you update to a new operating system. Is that teenager logic accurate?
It is now, I think. They're one step ahead, because here's what happened. Over the summer, there were eight or nine beta versions of the software. So silly people like me downloaded a beta version, meaning an untested version, and became guinea pigs for Apple. So we've been through mysterious crashes, weird behavior, looking at launching a new operating system like that, a lot of, I would say 99.9% of the bad things that are going to happen have already happened. And you're good to go first day if you can get it first day. The thing to remember is back up your phone first and then make sure that you have completed incremental updates. Now is the time before the official launch to complete those little point 1, 2, 3, 4 updates to your operating system. Make sure everything is good to go and go for it.
Okay. I'm going to change the subject. Jared, the other big news in the technology world this past month, of course, has been Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods.
Giant corporation bought another huge corporation.
Yes, folks who live in the Portland area may have gone to the Whole Foods there. I believe the only one in Maine still.
Yep.
And seen some prices drop. Are these prices loss leaders to get people into the store? Are they another way Amazon's trying to take over the world? What does all of this mean?
All great questions and all to be determined. Definitely probably lowering prices immediately on a bunch of things is a potential loss leader, but also right off the bat, great marketing. You know, they got – if you know, Whole Foods is always known as the expensive place where you go to spend a lot of money. You know,
whole paycheck.
Whole paycheck. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to think of. What are the people – yeah, so whole paycheck. And by lowering that, you know, they're trying to bring in more of the masses. There's possibilities that some of that could be offset, for example, whereas Amazon can now sell the Whole Food private label brands through their website, collect revenue where they didn't have it before to maybe offset some of those prices. Bringing in more volume of people will allow them to have lower prices. You know, a lot of Whole Foods are not the traditional size of some of your other grocery stores, especially the one we have here in Portland. Good luck trying to find a parking space between 12 and 2. It's always pretty darn packed. When you walk into the one here in Portland now, right in front of you, they've got a big box of Amazon Echoes and Alexas for sale.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, if you can, you know, if it's for me, I look at it, and I'm no Jeff Bezos, but it's another marketing avenue and tool and path for them to put their products and services in front of people. And the grocery store, until 3D printing takes over food, which we could talk about, that's coming down the road, just like in Star Trek someday. But until you can print your own food, the grocery store has always been the constant. Technology changes, but we still go to the store to pick up food. And getting those eyeballs and access to those bodies, you know, in a brick and mortar type setting, is interesting. You know, the other thing that I don't know if people are aware, but Amazon has out in, I believe, Seattle or San Francisco, they have some demo, quote unquote, grocery stores where you just walk in with your phone in your pocket, take what you want off the shelf and walk out. And the RFID chips in there know what you took and it just charges your account out. There's no bagger. There's no check person. There's no anything. So they're, you know, they're actually, and that's something, speaking to people in the grocery business, I mean, that could be a big game changer for people down the road. You could just walk into a store, grab what you want, and walk out without the hassle of lines or anything like that. Amazon also, looking at Whole Foods and their distribution and their warehouse networks, you know, the thing that makes Amazon able to get us a package the next day is they've taken their distribution line and revolutionized it. You know, a lot of people don't realize, but I think one of the cool things about Amazon is they have dark warehouses. Robots don't need lights. They don't pay light bills in a lot of these places because the robots are sorting the inventory and moving the product. And they literally.
So we really have no idea how high tech it is.
It's unbelievable. I mean, you've got Amazon Air. They've started their own airline to start moving their own products and services. I feel like Amazon has probably single-handedly helped bring back the United States Postal Service. I mean, they deliver on Sundays now. And why do they do that? They do that because of Amazon. So it's a behemoth buying a behemoth, that's for sure. And it gives them a foothold into our everyday brick and mortar life now. And the changes that come will probably be substantial and create some ripples through everybody else's business.
Janet, I want to ask you about something else. You come to us from the library world, which used to mean books on shelves that people checked out, and it still does. But you and librarians I've spoken to over the past decade have really, really had to grapple with e-books and, you know, figuring out how to lend them, how to figure out how many to own, how to handle this. You've kind of figured it all out. Libraries all over Maine have a brand new system that was launched last year, but now you're finding fewer and fewer people actually have e-books.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. The e-reader industry the readers and themselves have flattened and dipped down. And part of it
so
is
the
because,
Kindles.
Right. So the Kindles, the Nooks, the Kobo readers, all those have flattened out. And part of it is because people are reading on their phones. Phones are bigger, so people can read on them. And then the tablets, as tablets got lighter. So I've been a devoted Kindle user. But my next purchase to put books on, and I can't even tell you how many Kindles I've had. I wear them out. Will probably be like an iPad mini because the weight of it is approaching what a Kindle was, the size of it about the same, but I'll be able to do multi-functions on one thing. So
people are still checking out books, but they're not checking them out to their Kindles or their Nooks. They're checking them out to their iPad or their smartphone.
Yeah, so there's still the e-books themselves. It kind of peaked, it flattened a little, but now it's kind of surging up. I think the latest thing that I read was, you know, there are a lot more people that are going back to, you know, some paperbacks, and they talk about the coloring book craze having an impact on it. But I think in reality, just from a cost perspective and a manufacturing perspective, we're going to continue to move away from paper, and it's just going to be what are we going to read on versus, you know, that I don't see us going back to a fully paper book society anytime soon.
But probably for Christmas presents this year, we're not looking at the surge that we've seen in the past of the e-readers.
My guess is no. You can put maybe I'll predict that. You know, where I do see that books sustaining is children's books, because the idea of holding a book and that visual thing, it's not quite the same. And, you know, one of the things that I don't worry about, but I've seen a couple of videos, you know, turning a page. Will that become something that's lost to kids in the next society? Because if you read everything electronic, you're not physically turning a page. And so, you know, what are we going to look like 100 years from now, you know, if you're presented with a book and you don't know how to turn the page?
Oh, my goodness. Sort of like if we were presented with a scroll now and asked to read it.
Well, it's like the rotary phone. A lot of people look at the rotary phone, kids now, and they have no idea what it is.
And I think there's a movement, too, Janet, that people are determining what certain devices are best for. Like, I personally find e-reading a nonfiction book, a memoir, is great on my iPad or my phone, but I can't read a novel that way. I need the actual book. So I think that a lot of people are finding certain different connections to the technology, whether it's a printed book for certain types of reading, children's books especially, or an electronic reader.
So no longer either or, but both.
Right.
Or
exactly.
All. We do have to take a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mainepublic.org. If you have an email question, please make it brief. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, presenting the Common Ground Country Fair, September 22nd through 24th. Details at mofca.org.
In Muncie, Indiana, the job market is good, but employers are still having problems filling positions. One reason? Too many applicants are failing drug tests, and it's hurting businesses.
We have companies, overseas companies, that are coming to us for us to be a supplier to them, and their number one question is workforce. And sober workforce.
How the opioid epidemic is affecting the economy on the next Morning Edition.
And Morning Edition gets underway tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Marshwood High School from South Berwick took the top honors in Maine Public Television's first season of High School Quiz Show Maine. Season 2 gets underway this fall, our first full season where 16 finalist teams from all around Maine will compete, with the winner then taking on the top regional teams from New Hampshire and Massachusetts. We're calling all superintendents, principals, and teachers. Now is the time to start planning to participate. Information about High School Quiz Show Maine, what's involved, how to form a team and register for the new season, and also to watch last season's contest, It's all at mainepublic.org. Just click on television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, answers to your tech questions. Joining me in the studio, Andrew Rosenstein, who is owner of TechPort, Janet McKenney, director of library development for the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is the owner of Necessary Technology. We invite you to join the conversation. Ask us questions. We don't judge. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Jim, who's calling from Hamden. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a problem with my printer. It is an HP PhotoSmart D4200 series printer attached to a Mac computer. It has worked great for the last 4 to 5 years and now has a message on the printer that says print cartridge or cartridges missing or not detected. I have turned it on and off. I have taken the cartridges out and put them back in. I've put on new cartridges. I've shut down the computer and restarted it, and nothing seems to work. And I would like some advice.
We've had a similar question before. I'm going to guess, Andrew, tell me if this is right. When he said, I've had the printer for 4 or 5 years, that was a giveaway.
Yeah, that's that. It sounds to me like there's damage to the print head. And the device that detects whether you have authentic cartridges and things like that. Printers sometimes just don't last that long. You could try spraying a little bit of compressed air into removing the print cartridge, trying to clean out and make sure there's no paper or dust on those sensors that detect the cartridge. If you're feeling really adventurous, take a Q-tip and soak it in isopropyl alcohol. Make sure it's pretty dry, and then just clean very gently those printer contacts. That may work.
So the only other thing I can think of too is with all the updates in the Mac and the age of the printer, you know, if it could be a printer driver recognizing something. But mm-hmm. I'm more inclined to follow Andrew's first steps. I'd buy a new printer.
Yeah, yes. Printers are the worst. We have a motto in our store: we don't fix printers. When we see someone lugging one out of their trunk and walking in, we feel really bad that we're about to tell them. And printers have become a liability. They're horrible for the environment because they become so inexpensive that they become throwaway items. You know, there are some printer repair guys around, but they're becoming like the Maytag man. You know, they're few and far between. And what you're going to pay, you know, your average for $80 to $100 these days, you can get an unbelievable all-in-one wireless printer that years ago was hundreds of dollars. So everything they said, I would agree with. I would definitely reinstall the software. Probably not going to work, but it's a good thing to try. Don't forget, we live in the world of Google. Google that exact error message that you're getting because you're probably not the first one in the world to get it. There might be some fixes out there. And then the last thing is HP printers. You could also look at the cartridges. HP has started putting expiration dates on cartridges. Mm-hmm. And their cartridges will essentially sometimes run out, and then the printer essentially will not use them or recognize them. So that's another possible option. But unfortunately, if you exhaust all these kind of troubleshooting methods, it's not a great answer, but it is the answer. It's time for a new printer.
Jim, thank you for your call. Good luck to you. We'll go to, let's see here, a tweet from John. I need a wireless solution to get audio video content from a Win PC to a TV with HDMI ports. What are my options, varied apps or sites?
There's a lot. I mean, you could hardwire it. I mean, it depends on what you have for a PC. If it has an HDMI out port, if it's a newer one, you can clearly direct connect. If you're looking to go wireless, then you could use things like an Apple TV, which is not a TV. It's a horrible name for a product because everyone thinks it's a TV. It's a box you plug into your TV. Chromecast is another one that allows you – those two devices allow you to stream content wirelessly from your Mac or PC directly to your TV with an HDMI port. And Andrew probably knows better, but I believe that the newest Apple TV supports some pretty high resolution as well.
Yeah, they are coming out with a 4K Apple TV that supports very high resolution. Great thing about Apple TV is if you have a PC, you can use iTunes for Windows and stream your music to your Apple TV and music system. But, you know, it's definitely doable.
The only difference in price, you know, you can pick up if it's a PC-based, you can pick up a Chromecast for $35.
Right.
An Apple TV is going to run you about $150. So there are some price differences there. But if you do have Apple products, iPhones, iPads, especially a Mac as a center computer, you will pay a little bit more for an Apple TV. I've got one in my house, and it's pretty good device. And it also streams and connects to all of your Hulus and Netflix. It's a one-stop shop for everything.
And soon to add Amazon streaming as well.
Amazon, they got us again.
So I want to ask you a personal question then. If you have an Apple TV, does one need to update the Apple TV like one has to update your other devices?
Sure.
Yes. But you can set the Apple TV to automatically update, and it will go and search down updates. It may ask you to re-enter your Apple ID, which is never a fun thing on the little tiny Apple TV remote, unless you have the newer Apple TV, which I don't have yet. But it's something that you will be updated this fall as well, Apple TV software.
I do have the newer Apple TV, and what he's referring to is one of my favorite features. You can just hold down the button on the remote and speak to it. So you could say – you could pick a specific show and say open X show on Netflix and or on iTunes, and you don't have to scroll through or find it.
That's $150?
Yeah, $149 plus tax.
Yeah. Siri
okay,
is Shannon, listening.
You haven't jumped in a while. Go on.
Yeah, you know, I think if he has a PC and not Macs, you know, I've used Chromecast. I have an Apple TV. It's ease of – setting up and how it integrates with all the other things that you have. So, you know, the Apple TV for me on my iPad and whatever, I can stream things. And then, you know, it does have Netflix and Hulu and all those kind of stuff. But, you know, the Chromecast is probably the least costly thing he could start with.
And PBS Passport.
And does both. I own both. So I'll promote both.
Okay. So we have an email from Maxine. I have a question about backing up my phone. When I hook it up to my computer, it won't – hold on just a second. When I hook it up to my computer, it won't recognize my phone. And Apple told me it's because my computer is, and she's gotten quotes, vintage, circa 2011, and I have to buy a new computer. Is this true, or is there a way to update the operating system or software to recognize the phone?
It does happen a lot. Your computer is not too old. If it's a 2011, you need to update to Sierra or the upcoming High Sierra, I think, will work on a 2011 machine. But right now, update to Sierra and then update iTunes as well. Complete all of those security updates, and it should work just fine.
Okay. Let's see here. Eileen says, I want to switch my ISP, Fairpoint, but my email is also with Fairpoint, and I have a lot of emails to sort into folders. How do I migrate it all over to my Gmail account so I can rid myself of Fairpoint once and for all? Also, is there a simple way to let folks know I have changed my email? Is there a way to have the email get forwarded as we do with snail mail? This is, Jared, a lot easier than it used to be, isn't it?
Yeah, couple of things. I don't know exactly how it worked with Verizon. If you close your account with them, if you immediately lose your mail. Back in the day, these ISPs, people would hang on to their mail for years. But right now, if they do, you kind of have a problem. When you set up a new Gmail account, Gmail's very good at integrating with some mail providers to import things over. I do not know if that worked with Verizon. You'd have to set up an account and see. What you'd really need to do is use a third-party program like Outlook or Mail or something. And tell me if you guys think, but I'm just thinking this through. And basically, you know, use a Microsoft Outlook so that you could import in what you have on Verizon. You know, when you use web-based mail, it's not on your computer. It's on their computer. So if you close down your account, you're going to lose everything. By setting up a Microsoft Outlook or a mail client program, Windows Mail or Apple Mail, you can import directly onto your computer. So you have a hard copy on your computer of that mail and then set up a Gmail account. And they may kind of be in separate buckets, and you might need to go back in the mail program. New Gmail comes in, you know, in one folder and your old emails in the other, so that you essentially have it archived. What happens with a lot of folks is, say you go from a Yahoo account to a Gmail, you know, you're not really closing the old one. You do set up mail forwarding. And I tell people this all the time. People come in with the longest, strangest, most horrible email addresses, and they go, I'm so sorry, I'm stuck with it. But you're not stuck with it. It's just like when you move in life. You go to the post office and you set up mail forwarding. Whenever you move to a new email account, if you don't close the old one down completely, just set up mail forwarding. Any message that goes through will get forwarded. If I send Janet an email to her old address, it'll get forwarded to her new address. She reads it. She replies back to me from her new address. And the last thing that I want people to think about is, if you think about when you write an email these days, I probably don't know Janet's email. I just start typing in Janet and
it pops up.
The computer does the work for me. Wow, magic. Your mail program will start to realize after Janet sends me a bunch of emails from Gmail and not from her old Yahoo, a lot of programs will essentially realize, hey, you know what? I think this is her more important email, her primary email, and kind of make that change for you. So if you forward it and you do that process, you can certainly put a signature at the bottom of your email. Hey, please note I've changed my email too. But don't overcomplicate it. You do not have to teach everyone in the world that you have a new email address. Just set up mail forwarding, reply from your new email address, and lo and behold, 6 months down the road, you'll find that you're getting a lot more email directly to that new address, and the old one is just essentially automatically being phased out.
So if your old email address is something like Fairpoint or Time Warner Spectrum and it's connected with your cable, is it a good idea maybe to have some overlap time before you cancel that cable?
Yeah, it's a good thought.
Yeah, it would give you some time. I think most of the people that I worked with, the most essential thing is their contacts. You know, it's all the people that they know and what those emails are. So those are the ones that, you know, if you can find a program to import the contacts into Gmail somehow, that's a number one thing. And the other thing is it's a really good opportunity to clean out your email, just in the same way that you would maybe have a yard sale before you move. Is a lot of times we retain emails that, you know, we don't necessarily need. And so you could certainly just forward those 10 or 20 really important emails and then just close the door on your old email life and go forward. But the contacts are the things that most people value the most.
And one last thing. I hate ISP emails. I just hate them. I hate the @main.rrs and the Verizons and stuff because, in my opinion, I have no proof. It's just anecdotal. But they were in the internet business. And I feel like a lot of them just threw email on as some added thing that you're going to get. And a lot of people signed up with, you know, Time Warner back in the day. They got their thing. They got their Roadrunner address, and they just started using it. We have more problems that we have to sort out with folks in terms of email with these ISP addresses, especially your Roadrunner ones. They have very small accounts. You can't store a lot of mail. So I am always on the holy mission to transfer people over to Gmail is my favorite. I live and die by it. But they built an email system because they wanted to be in the email business. The ISPs are in the internet providing business, and for them it's kind of an add-on. So it's not their core product, and they don't always do it the best. So if you can transition before you have to make the move, it's not a bad idea.
All right. We'll try to squeeze in one call before our break. Joanne and Harrison, go ahead.
Hi, I live on a lake, and I have U.S. cellular cell phone coverage, which is excellent. I have tried every company, every other provider, Verizon, Sprint, U.S. cellular, to get Wi-Fi, to use routers. I can get no coverage whatsoever. I recently upgraded from my longtime flip phone to a Samsung Galaxy J3, And my neighbor tells me they've had good luck with Google Wi-Fi. Could you tell me how easy that might be, given my situation?
We have perplexed looks. Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
As far as I know, Google Wi-Fi is only available in very limited areas. Kansas City, for instance, has Google Wi-Fi. As far as I know, that doesn't exist yet in rural Maine.
Joanne, your friend who told you about it, does that friend live here or somewhere else?
They're just two homes away. We're on Long Lake in Naples, and they have it on their dock in their house. Now, I haven't really they just moved in, so I didn't want to hit them with how to get them.
Well, I would get their password. And
as I said, I don't know them well enough. But, we don't have a TV. We have no need for cable. But now that I've stepped into the world of technology and finally gotten a smartphone, it would be nice occasionally to be able to check my Gmail from my phone or else online. And it just seemed like an easy fix, but there's got to be a glitch there somehow.
Well, I just Googled it real quick, and Google Wi-Fi does look like they actually have a product, which is essentially, it looks like a router of some sort.
Yeah, that's what I was.
But that's going to still be contingent upon the signal that you're getting into your home. So what I would I would recommend just Google, Google Wi-Fi. You'll see the product there, and it tells you about setup and things like that. I'm going to mark it to learn a little bit more about it. But at the end of the day, it's still going to be subject to what internet connection's coming in. So I think the important question for your neighbor, maybe bring him a pie or something and say, hey, while I'm here,
show me how this works.
Who is your internet service provider? What is the feed that's feeding into that device? Who are you paying monthly to get your internet service? And Andrew's mentioned a million times over 5 years now that rural Maine Wi-Fi internet is a big problem. And for our friends up in Augusta listening, somebody start working on it, please.
Okay, we have to go to a break. Good luck to you, Joanne, and we'll be right back.
The Russians who met with the Trump campaign last year didn't actually work for Vladimir Putin, but
they're part of the legal apparatus that helps him, the political apparatus that helps him, or are engaged in negative public relations campaigns, which are also a very important technique of the Kremlin to go after its enemies.
We'll hear what they want this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. On Sunday, September 17th, Maine Public Television will begin airing The Vietnam War, the new Ken Burns 18-hour documentary. We're also still looking for Vietnam veterans or anyone who was affected by the conflict who are willing to share their own story on how the war affected them. We're archiving these submissions on our website, and a few will be recorded for a broadcast, which you can now hear at various times of the day here on Maine Public Radio. If you're interested, please send your testimonials and stories to mystory@mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, our tech team is here to answer your questions. In the studio with me, Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. Andrew Rosenstein is the owner of TechPort. Janet McKenney, director of library development for the Maine State Library. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. I have an email from Sandy. I am a longtime Apple user with a desktop, laptop, iPad, and iPhone. I want to replace my iPhone 5 with a newer phone, mostly to have the benefit of a better camera. Video functions are not particularly important to me. I would prefer to go to a 6S. But before I buy my next iPhone, I'd like to consider a not Apple phone. I could save hundreds of dollars, but I don't know what the trade-off would be. What would be the best non-Apple choice? What would I lose with compatibility with my other devices? If I can afford an iPhone, should I just stick with Apple?
Well, you lose all compatibility if you're using, another kind of device, unless you're, using different kinds of software. So I think you have to prioritize what's most important. And if the interoperability of your devices is important, to me, that's an important thing for ease of use. And it's also, you know, I struggle helping people with their Android phones because I'm looking at it with my Apple head and looking for things in different ways. You know, the store is at a different place. The, you know, how you read a book is in a different place. Where the apps are, where, you know, how it's organized is a little bit different. So she would have to take into account how much more she would have to learn in order to save the money.
Yeah.
We'll go to Ben calling from Rockland. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me. So I guess this question is mostly for Janet because it's got to do with libraries. Last year at USM, I did a fairly heavy research project in the humanities, which basically just means I used USM's online library resources to read an endless number of PDFs. And I did this mostly on traditional computer screens, which I find that when I read endless lines of PDF text on a traditional computer screen, I get headaches, I get a lot of tense problems, not to mention some attention problems. And I find that when I read in the Kindle reader format, which is what we were talking about before, they've done a lot of work to make it less of an eye strain, tense headache inducing problem. And I'm wondering about if there's a better way than the like very clunky mechanisms for getting PDFs on the Kindles that libraries have been looking into, or if there's a future for e-reader tech in like that kind of field of study in like that world.
Not that I know of. I mean, that's always been kind of the obstacle. The e-ink technology that's on the Kindles is very much designed around the, you know, Amazon's, you know, proprietary software. And so, you know, they're into selling the books and not into you reading free stuff. So that's the tough thing. And I hate to even say this because I struggle with this sometimes too. So what I find is I go back and I print the PDF, and so I end up having a copy on my electronic device that's there for reference. But if it's something really long, I'll end up printing it and reading it on paper to move against the eye strain. It's really thoughtful to think about another way to, you know, PDFs are an easy way to get something online. You know, it's a portable document and it's to replicate what a print document would look like. But so it was never created to address the particular issue that you're talking about.
Ben, thanks for calling in today. We'll move on to a tweet. This is from Martin. I'm going on the bike main ride next week. What's the best device to bring? Long battery life and ability to edit Word docs.
On a bike?
An extension cord, actually.
Enjoy the scenery. Don't edit documents. Yeah, a phone. I mean, if I guess we're looking small. You need a MacBook Air, a Chromebook. You can technically on an iPhone or an Android device, you can edit documents on it. So it's all for, I guess if you're literally going on a bike trip, it comes down to, in my opinion, probably weight and size and either a smaller computer. If you don't own one and you're just looking for something to go out and get quick.
What has good battery life? That's one thing he said in his tweet.
Probably an iPad mini would be a good choice in terms of size and battery life. I think what tends to happen to me is that I'm using my phone, I get calls and texts, and that tends to drain a lot of the battery life if I need to do some work because you can run Pages or Microsoft Word on your phone. But I think I would go for an iPad mini, and that way you've got extended battery life, an easy way to edit documents, and it's light.
I know we get kind of Apple-centric, but they do make the best batteries. I don't know what Apple has done and how they do it and why other people can't. I mean, other people are catching up with newer devices, but Apple does make batteries that last for a long time. And the other thing with Andrew's point, if you bring a phone, I don't know where you're biking, but if you're biking through also rural areas that don't have strong cell phone signal, your phone is going to work harder to find a signal and burn through the battery even faster. So,
yeah, and you know, the advantage, you know, you could get the tablet with the Wi-Fi. So now, I mean, you're paying two plans, but they're you're maintaining both of them. So your phone is doing what your phone's doing and the tablet is doing, you know, if you need that. You know, the only other thing I can think of is like a Lenovo Yoga or something like that, which is a very small, lightweight laptop. It depends, I think, on the depth of the work that you're doing. You know, when you say editing a document, are you making minor changes? Or are you actually editing a book? If you're actually editing a book, it's much harder to do on a tablet unless you have the keyboard and you have a mouse and all those kinds of things to attach to it. But then there's the weight factor. So those are what you have to manage.
We'll go to Bodenham. And David, hi, David, go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering where I can get a laptop, not a fancy one, with a Swiss keyboard.
A Swiss computer website. That's probably a poor answer. Yeah. A lot of times you could actually – you'd have to research it. A lot of the newer laptops are built so thin that when you have to replace the keyboard, you have to replace the entire top case section, which might be cost prohibitive. But, you know, a lot of the standard laptops, the keyboard is a replaceable item on its own. And you can purchase keyboards from other countries. We actually just bought one in our store recently that was accidentally French-Canadian. So we had some different symbols on it. So that might be an option where basically you buy a machine that has an English keyboard on it, and then it would cost you, I'd say probably typically, you know, less than $100 or so. But you could actually then replace that with that particular keyboard if that's available as a product to purchase and have someone do that for you.
The other option is to consider a Bluetooth keyboard that's wireless, and you might have to purchase that from a foreign source. But Apple does sell a variety of wireless keyboards in different language configurations.
All right. Well, good luck to you, David. We've got a message here from a Facebook post from Jeremy. Can you tell me if there is a device or other technology that would allow me to record live television like we used to do with our VCRs without a cable subscription or cable-provided supplied DVR? I want to be able to record live sporting events with my digital antenna signal and watch them later.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just going to throw it. I would look it up. I mean, there's new things coming out. For example, I've moved off of cable to DirecTV Now, which is an internet-provided one. It doesn't have a DVR, but there are third-party companies coming out with essentially DVRs that run independent to whoever your provider is.
I don't have a newer television, but don't some of the newer televisions come with that built in?
And I know there are external DVR devices that you can do and hook up to a TV, but you want to make sure that the hardware that you buy matches the television that you buy as far as how it hooks to each other and how it plays.
And our engineer just mentioned Myth TV, MYTH TV. There's always so much more to learn about. It never stops. Okay, so let's see here.
But that is becoming more important because so many people are cutting the cord.
Right.
And
right.
You don't have a DVR or record option.
Okay. I think that's going to have to be all of our questions today. Well, no, I'm going to squeeze one in here. All this e-reading, what is it doing to our eyesight? This is from Megan on Facebook. Have you looked into this, Janet?
There's always talk of eye strain, and that was, you know, where that big line was between the e-ink on the Kindles and making it easier on your eyes, whereas like the new Kindle Glow is backlit, and so you do have that, you know, that light, you know. I think it's just amount of time. I'd get eye strain because the print was too small on the books I was reading, and how many lights did I have to have on in the room? So that is something I'm wondering evolutionary-wise, whether, you know, our eyes are going to change over the next 100 years and adapt to the glow that we have. So, it's eye strain. Anybody that works on a computer all the time, anybody that's always reading on a device all the time, and if you do that, you know, it's just going to happen. So, but I don't know all the absolute medical facts about.
We'll know in 40 years.
Right, exactly.
So with our last few seconds, let's do your guys' mantras. Update, 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 correct?
Yes.
Back up first.
Back up first.
And then update.
Okay, back up. Update, update, update. Be sure and turn your devices off.
Yes, and shout out to the Boston Red Sox for embracing the Apple Watch technology to steal signs from the Yankees.
You are trouble, Jared Maxfield.
Go Red Sox.
On that note, that was Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology.
And Red Sox fan.
Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPorts here as well. Janet McKenney, director of library development for Maine State Library. Thank you, as always, for coming in, even if you are stinkers. John Keibel ran the board today. Dan Plummer answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. The show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about the value of a college degree and whether higher education contributes to the common good. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.